From 91.5 KRCC in Colorado Springs, this is Air Check, a show about great music in the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Vicki Greger.
I'm Jeff Beery.
And I'm Jake Brownell. On today's show, the legendary David Bromberg drops by to play a few tunes. Multi-talented local musician Ryan Flores reflects on the life of a working artist. Author Leanna D'Angelo tells the forgotten story of Pietro Satriano, the first musician to perform at Red Rocks. And our very own Vicki Greger takes a trip down memory lane with a jar of ticket stubs. All that today on Air Check. So we begin the show, as we always do, with our musical roundtable, where we go around the table and pick a song that we haven't been able to get out of our heads over the last month. It's a new year. There's been lots of good releases already. Vicki, let's just get things started with you.
I had one of those high-end problems where the record I picked has so many incredible songs, I really had to listen three or four times to figure out which one I really was in love with the most. And this is a record that's a few months old from a band that had some acclaim a couple years ago, and for good reason, from a record they did called Half the City. I'm talking about St. Paul and the Broken Bones, and this is from their new one, Sea of Noise. The song is called Sanctify.
What good is a bullet? We're no good. What good is a flower without no song? Oh, but I wanna feel sanctuary.
That is cool. Can I have that be my song, please?
Sorry, I get to have that one. What you can probably tell right off the bat, and certainly what this band is known for, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Paul Genoway, that incredible voice of his, which, you know, makes me certainly think of Otis Redding and the Temptations. And this is just pure, beautiful R&B, Stax, Memphis kind of soul.
What else can you tell us about St. Paul and the Broken Bones? You know where they're from or anything?
Minneapolis, aren't they?
No, they're out of Alabama, actually. And about 2.5 years ago, 2014, they had a record called Half the City. And it got everyone's attention because, again, of Paul Genoway's amazing vocal style. We had the great pleasure of seeing them at Ivy Wild. We helped sponsor that show. And to watch that band in such a intimate venue just blow up with all that R&B and rump-shaking, soulful, down-on-your-knees, James Brown testifying was one of the highlights of my concert going
experience.
They
really did break just then. I mean,
yeah.
I remember they were featured on NPR, on Morning Edition, got a glowing review. I don't think they'll be back in that small of a venue again.
Oh, no, I don't think so either. And this record is phenomenal, really. Considering it's the sophomore effort, I think the jump from Half the City to this is incredible. It's so different, yet so deep in the same way.
Nice pick.
Yeah, this is great. Jeff, it's your turn.
Well, I picked a song by a band that has a new release coming out. It's not even out yet, right, Vicki?
Hot off the press.
We actually had to download this off of the website, the band's website, and it's the new one from Spoon. It's going to be the title track to their new album called Hot Thoughts. Guys have had, this is going to be their ninth full-length album. They've been around since 1993, but I think they've kind of picked up recognition and steam with the last two, three albums, Gimme Fiction and Ga, 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 Ga.
You gotta count that. Ga.
There's five Gas.
Five Ga.
Ga, 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 Ga.
That's five, you're right.
Yeah, I have to count it out.
Did you drop a Ga on the way in?
I might have. The band has had rotating members in and out of the band over the years, but I think they've hit their stride with this. And the interesting thing about, I think, about this band is that they started getting included in a bunch of TV shows and films, and it really jettisoned them into the public eye. You know, they showed up on The Simpsons, and they were featured in Stranger Than Fiction, Austin City Limits, Saturday Night Live, you know, and it's just helped their success for them to be showcased like that. I think they're kind of quirky, kind of a cake feel to them, but I really like it. I think this song builds and kind of want to turn it up a little bit when it's peaking.
You know, one of the things I really love about Spoon is lead singer Britt has such a specific kind of voice in his phrasing. And their drummer, Jim Eno, I'm assuming he's still in the band. He's a very cool drummer and is known for some production work, too. So I think they're able to grow together as this unit. And they explore their funk. They're like an indie pop soul funk band.
Right,
and
right.
That continues to expand.
Well, I can't wait to hear the full-length album. This is not even available to hold in your hands yet. It's a digital release, and it'll be interesting to see what the full length is. I can't wait, personally.
Very cool. Good pick, Jeff.
I like it.
Jake, you're next. I understand you're doing something a little different this time.
I am doing something a little bit different. From music, recently I've just been craving escape and craving something that I can kind of let wash over me and take me to a different place. And this album, which just was released, there's been some singles trickling out over the last few months, but it was just released at the end of January. The album is called Not Even Happiness by the sort of alt-folk singer Julie Byrne, out of Brooklyn, and it's just a beautiful album, and the song I'm going to play is called Morning Dove.
Now and now, walking in the woods.
Gone sad bastard on us. That's
hey,
beautiful.
We've all
that
got a little
beautiful.
Bit of that in us, right? It's
yeah.
You know, it's been a sort of a crazy time.
Uh-huh.
I feel like there's a certain intensity about us in the culture, and to me, this has just been a really nice counterpoint.
Need a calming influence.
Yeah, and it's just and the whole album, and it's just like, you know, 40 minutes of bliss. You just
nice.
Sort of let it ride. And
so is Julie Burns, she's singing, is she playing this guitar work?
She is, yeah.
Beautiful guitar
work.
Yeah, beautiful.
Nice guitar work.
Absolutely, that finger-picking style kind of, to me, evokes even like Leonard Cohen
yeah.
and
mm-hmm.
also like Nick Drake a little bit, you
yeah.
know. Just, you can't go wrong with it.
Yeah, and her voice, I don't know what the proper term is, if she's a second soprano or an alto, but I love the tenor of her voice. And I'm thinking about some other, well, I'm thinking about, actually, I thought about Joni Mitchell
uh-huh.
a little bit, and a little bit of Judy Collins. Like, it's kind of cool to have that revisit, especially with some of the women that declared a certain kind of songwriting in
mm-hmm.
the 60s and 70s. You know, and then you've got Sharon Van Etten and
mm-hmm.
Laura Marling.
Absolutely.
And
Beth Orton.
Beth Orton, the very nice reference there.
Yeah.
Just these amazing women making beautiful music.
That's
I'll always be for that.
So there you have it, another edition of the Musical Roundtable. Thanks, you guys.
Oh, this was fun.
Always a great time.
This is Aircheck from 91.5 KRCC.
Local musician Ryan Flores is a man of many talents. He's a published poet and photographer, as well as a singer, producer, and guitarist. He can often be seen around town performing solo on his classical guitar or in one of his various ensembles, such as Leopard in the Vine and Moon Honey. Flores recently joined Jake Brunell in the studio to discuss his approach to writing instrumental music and the rigors of working as a full-time musician.
Ryan Flores, thank you so much for taking the time to come in today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jake.
For folks who have seen you play around town, I think they'll instantly recognize you and your classical style guitar that
yeah.
you have, the nylon string guitar. When did you start playing that sort of guitar?
You know, I'm a late bloomer. I didn't start playing music until I was 21, so there's always hope. but I was a singer in bands in high school, in a couple bands, and then the guitarist with whom I worked very closely for like 3 years came to a tragic end at 21. He died in a car crash, and so it was very hard on me. And after that, I just realized, wow, I need to be more self-reliant. And so I started accompanying myself, and I had an old $100 tattered nylon string guitar. So that's what I learned on this like big thick neck guitar that was not easy to play, and it showed all my mistakes. And so I went, you know, back to electric and then steel string acoustic guitar. And then I, you know, probably 10 years ago, I was just like, man, I just love the sound of the nylon string. That's what I'm going to play. And that's all I play now.
Beyond just sort of the warmth and the sound, what drew you to that sort of finger-picking style that you have become so great at?
Oh, thanks so much. Well, I love rock and roll. And Jimmy Page is my favorite guitar player ever, so it's not like I'm just sitting around listening to Segovia all the time, you know what I mean? But there's something about the right-hand technique where you can tell a story through a chord. There's almost a narrative in every chord that you have to find in order for it to like walk through gracefully and tell this story. And so for me, it's like there's just more nuance and richness in like being able to explain something with a chord instead of just like, ta-da, here's the chord, and then, you know, and on to the next thing. I think it's just as a writer, I just want to like make every little character nuanced and rounded, and, you know, and so the chords are the same way, you know, these are like the painter's palette, you know what I mean? It's not like if I just paint in monochrome all the time, it's like, it's not as interesting to me.
Have a number of different projects and a number of different sort of styles that you have explored, but I kind of want to focus on the thing that I think people are most likely to have seen you perform, perhaps the sort of Latin gypsy yep. kind of sound. Tell me a little bit about how you kind of came to that style.
Sure. Well, I think I come by it honestly by virtue of my heritage, because I'm Chexican, Chex-Mex. My mom is Czech and my dad's from Zacatecas, Mexico. And so I have this, like, you know, this very Eastern European influence and then this very Latino influence too. And so I don't want to wax too mystical here, but I think that we are informed by our heritage to some degree or another. So basically it's a synthesis of these specific styles, and it's flamenco, tango, mariachi, and then Balkan Peninsula, like Hungarian, Romanian style. It sounds specific when you hear it, like, oh, okay, that's that style or whatever. But it's incorporating disparate elements and trying to make them into something that that has its own vibe, as it were. Yeah.
I wonder if you could maybe play us a song, sort of an example of,
sure.
of that project.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let me think. Okay.
Beautiful.
Thanks.
This is your job. This is what you do. Yeah. You know, you make music, and I wonder, being a full-time musician and artist, the kinds of ways you have to get creative about making money and about sort of getting your stuff out there. Has that been a challenge for you? What's that been like?
You know, it's been a hustle. You know, it's not glamorous. And I always tell people about 80% of what I do is loading and unloading my car or rolling cables or restringing my guitars, you know, and it's like, and then like 15% rehearsing and then like 10% on stage, you know what I mean? And so you've got to really fall in love with all of the, or else it's not worth it. So I love it. There are parts that are, I like more than others. I don't like really selling myself. So I think, you know, I'm to the point where I'm starting to have other people book for me, which is great, you know, but it's a hustle. And I think that's part that kind of has informed why I play so many different styles. So I can cast a wide net to fit into all kinds of venues, you know, because it's like, if I'm just playing indie rock, then I have a limited number of venues. If I'm just playing classical guitar, I have a limited number of venues. You know, if I play this like weird pastiche of Latin gypsy music, then it's like, oh, okay, yeah, you want dance music, I got that. You want like background for a restaurant, then I got this, you know. Yeah. Wine bar, sure. Yeah, you know, so it's like basically reinventing the wheel for me the whole time, you know, because I've had a bunch of jobs and, you know, I have a degree and that I don't use. So it's been interesting and colorful, and I'm just so lucky. And I love it. And I don't want to do anything else.
And so whether it's one style or another style or a wine bar or a venue, like, do you feel like it's you in all those situations? Do you feel like all those styles are honest reflections of what you're passionate about and interested in?
Oh, that's profound. Yeah. You know, I'm passionate about and interested in music and lifting people's spirits. And if that means getting their feet moving, or if that means getting them thinking about a turn of phrase and some lyrics, or if that means providing a beautiful atmosphere for them to sit down and have a lovely meal or a conversation, then that interests me. But for me, I'm so nourished by music, and it not every style is representational of what I want to do forever. But the fact that I get to do this for a living and make music and make people happy or whatever it is that they're getting from it. I'm just grateful and I love it. So,
well, if there's another song maybe you'd like to play, we can take it out on that.
Sure.
Ryan Flores, thank you so much for taking the time to come in.
Many thanks, Jake. I appreciate you.
That was Jake Brownell speaking with Ryan Flores. Ryan plays solo and with several Colorado Springs-based bands, all of which you can find through his indie label, Heart-Shaped Records. There's much more to come on Air Check here on 91.5 KRCC. Stay with us. KRCC in Colorado Springs. This is Air Check, a show about great music here in the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Jeff Beery.
I'm Jake Brownell.
And I'm Vicki Greger.
Red Rocks Amphitheater is without a doubt one of the most famous venues in Colorado, maybe the world. I'll go that far. And yet I'm willing to bet that most people couldn't tell you the first thing about its history. Not so for our next guest. Dr. Leanna D'Angelo is the author of Maestro Satriano, a novel based on the life of Pietro Satriano, the esteemed conductor who led the very first performance at Red Rocks back in 1906. D'Angelo is a descendant of Satriano, and in her book, she seeks to resurrect the memory of this important but mostly forgotten figure from Colorado music history. She joined our very own Vicki Gregor for an interview.
Leanna, Maestro Satriano is what family member to you? Is a great-great-uncle?
Correct. He would have been my great-great-uncle.
Your great-great-uncle. And what's so cool about this wonderful musician, this talented man, is he's the first musician to play at Red Rocks. What I'd like to ask you is to talk to us about Pietro Satriano and give us an idea of how this all started.
Pietro was considered to be a child prodigy, and he studied at music conservatories all over Europe. And according to his obituary, he performed in America for the first time actually when he was only 11 years old. And Pietro was the cultural icon of Denver in the early 1900s. And in order to research the book, I researched very extensively and found at least 50 articles, if not more, that were about him in the papers, in the Denver Post, Denver Times. There was something called the Denver Republican. Pietro was nationally known, and one of the old newspaper articles actually said that he was declared the best bandmaster in the country.
Wow. Leanna, I wanted to ask you to fill in the blanks a little bit, expound a little bit on the kind of music that Pietro was doing, was making. What was that music?
Well, he was mostly a classical trained musician, of course, and so most of his concerts were classical. But after a while, he started doing classical performances and including ragtime, and then people didn't like that. So according to the papers, he then would do two concerts a week, one classical and one ragtime sort of concert. His signature song was Holy City, and he would usually do a solo performance on the cornet. If I haven't said so yet, he was a cornet virtuoso, and so was his father, Antonio. And one of the interesting quotes was, "When Satriano holds the cornet to his lips, it is a thing of beauty."
Pietro, even though he was this amazing composer, prodigy, and musician, he loved his ragtime, right? He had something about his performance. I mean, he was kind of rock and roll before there was rock and roll at Red Rocks, because I've noted a few times people commenting on his unusual body movements, that he was very acrobatic in the way he led his musicians. And that's very rock and roll.
Yes. It was a bit common, though, at the time. All the bandmasters, there was a lot of competition among bandmasters. They were just trying to get people's attention. They were all vying to be the people's favorite. But yes, according to the papers, Pietro Satriano would sometimes leap in the air while he was conducting. So it made it interesting. And one of the articles says something like, "The Denver band leader attains such acrobatic feats, one worries he may fall over."
How did he end up finding himself at the Rocks? How did that happen?
The real story is that John Brisbane Walker purchased the land. He was a businessman, and that he asked my great-great-uncle, Pietro Satriano, and his 25-piece band to perform there. And that is the usual story, the usual history. I can't help but think that musicians might have known about it up there. After all, the Indians were up there doing ceremonies and probably just living regular life, and I bet they knew about the great acoustics, though I really can't help but wonder if it wasn't the musicians who went to the business people about turning it into an outdoor amphitheater. The first performance there, by the way, was on May 31st, 1906.
1906.
It was at 3 p.m. in the afternoon, and I don't know about you, but when I think of May 31st at 3 p.m. in Colorado, you know what I think of.
The rain.
Yeah. I imagine they were all very worried that it would be rained out, but on the other hand, I guess they had to wait, give people a chance to get up there. There was a special train that day, and it cost 25 cents to get up there, but some people may have come by carriage.
this first performance at Red Rocks, I know there's no playbill. You know, certainly nobody was videotaping or, you know, getting their cameras out. Do we know much about what that looked like, what the components of it were, how long it lasted, that kind of thing?
The Colorado History Center sent me photos of the stage. It was kind of just a makeshift stage. It was just a wooden crate, and there was nothing else there. So I assumed that people were sitting on blankets or some sort of chairs or something. But no, nothing is known. People have theorized about which songs he probably performed, and it was believed to have all been classical that night. And he almost certainly performed the Holy City.
I have to ask you, with this background in history, when you or your family members go to see shows at Red Rocks, what's that experience like for you? I mean, it's sort of like yours in a way.
I think of it that way. I don't think anybody else does, though. I have only been to Red Rocks one time, and frankly, I was a little bit disappointed, but only because of the large video screens that are up there mm-hmm. on the stage, and I felt like it took away from the immediacy of the performance, and I liked it on the rare occasion that they turned off the video screen, they dimmed the lights, and all there was the performance. Given that Pietro is no longer alive, and given that I can speak for him, I think he would not like it. I think he would be disappointed on what it's turned into.
So this was kind of shocking to me. So with everything that's happened, you know, the first performance at Red Rocks, the influence that he and his music and, you know, his family had in the area, I was kind of shocked to see that he has not been inducted into the Red Rocks Hall of Fame or the Colorado Hall of Fame. How does one correct that? I mean, this is definitely somebody who had a big influence on something that we all get to enjoy now and something we take for granted now, our arts and music scene in this part of Colorado.
Red Rocks is owned by the city of Denver, and it's very difficult to get through there, but I have expressed my disappointment that he has not been inducted. I think Colorado has a tendency to not honor its past as well as many states or cities do. You know, they've inducted people like the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, but they have not inducted Pietro Satriano, even though any time you hear about Red Rocks, anytime it's in the media, they say, and the first musician to perform there was Pietro Satriano on May 31st, 1906. So part of the reason I wrote the book was to bring people's attention to him and what a major contribution he made and how unfortunate it is that he has been overlooked. And also I wrote the book because when you do hear about him in the media, that's all you hear. Pietro Satriano and his 25-piece band were the first musicians to perform there, and they never say anything else. So hopefully my book gives people something else to talk about. It kind of fills in the blanks about who he was.
Leanna D'Angelo, thank you so much for spending time telling this story of Maestro Satriano. Really appreciate you sharing this.
Thank you.
That was Vicki Gregor speaking with Leanna D'Angelo. D'Angelo is the author of Maestro Satriano, a novel based on the life of Pietro Satriano, who led the first performance at Red Rocks in 1906. For more information on the book and details about upcoming book signings, head to krcc.org. You're listening to AirCheck from 91.5 KRCC. Jeff, you recently had the honor of hosting a living legend on the Blue Plate special. He's a multi-instrumentalist and songwriter who's played with everyone from Bob Dylan to George Harrison to Edie Brickell. And his name is David Bromberg.
You know, I knew a man, Bojangles, and he danced for you.
Yeah, David Bromberg. It was such a pleasure to host this guy here at KRCC. He's an incredible talent, and he came into the studio with his backing band from his latest album, The Blues, The Whole Blues, and Nothing But The Blues. And they played a few songs, and I was able to ask David some questions about his long career and his second life as the co-owner of a violin shop in Delaware.
Let's take a listen to that interview.
I'm Jeff Beery, and with me here in the studio this afternoon Mr. David Bromberg and band. There's a whole collection of people here. David, thank you for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having us. We're happy to be here.
Snowy, cold Colorado day. We appreciate you making the effort. Well, you're a very busy man. You've recorded an amazing, amazing number of albums over the years. And you took a little hiatus, David?
22 years.
Was that because you'd reached your pinnacle, or you were just burnt out on the whole damn thing?
I was completely burnt out. I was on the road for 2 years without being home for 2 weeks. So
not fun. Well,
yeah, it got to me.
Yeah.
And I was too dumb to realize it was burnout. I discovered, you know, I didn't discover I was burnt out. I discovered that when I wasn't on the road, I wasn't writing, I wasn't practicing, I wasn't jamming. There's nothing of a musician there. And I didn't want to be one of these guys who drags himself on the stage and does a bitter imitation of something he used to love.
Right.
So I decided I had to find another way to lead my life. And I found violins to be very interesting as a intellectual pursuit. I was fascinated by how someone could look at a violin and not refer to the label or the ticket inside and tell you when and where and sometimes by whom it was made. I wanted to learn to do that. So so I went to violin making school. When I graduated, I started to study violin identification, and that's what I do in my shop.
So you can listen to a violin and give it the make and model and year, so to speak?
Well, no. It has very little to do with listening. It has more to do with looking.
Ah.
Yeah. And, you know, with violins, there are certain factories, but the great ones were made by individuals.
Right.
Thousands and thousands of different individuals. So like music, it's one of these things you'll never reach the bottom of.
So you open up the David Bromberg and Associates Fine Violin Store on the East Coast. Is it still open?
Oh, yeah.
Got a good manager there while you're on the road?
Yeah.
You want to introduce your band real quick and then play a couple tunes for us? You're all set and ready to go here.
Sure. I'll introduce them. Mark, this is Swabic.
Nice to meet you, sir.
Yeah, that's... No, this is Mark Cosgrove plays guitar. Swabic Zenyushenko plays the bass. Josh Konuski plays the drums, which today is a post office box. And Nate Grower plays fiddle.
So what are you going to play for us? You've got the new album. You're touring in support of that, I take it.
Yeah.
You play everything. Blues, bluegrass, folk, rock.
It'd be a variety of things. The truth is we don't have fixed sets.
You know, oh, really?
We decide before we go on stage what we're going to start with, and then whatever I feel like should come next comes next.
So is that the case right now? Mr. David Bromberg is going to tell you guys what to play and you'll play it, or have you decided to just starts playing it? You got to adapt. All right. Well, go, David.
All right.
One,
eyesight.
Two. A one, two, three, go.
Now you can talk about your pretty women, but boy, you ought to see mine. You can talk about pretty women, but first you ought to see mine. Oh, when that woman get to moving, she bring eyesight to the blind. Now her daddy must have been a millionaire. You can tell by the way she walks. Daddy must have been a millionaire. You can tell by the way she walks. When that woman get to moving, the deaf and mute begin to talk. All right, Mark. Evening, we were stretched out across the bed. Dying man next door quit dying, lifted up his head and said, Ooh, she's good looking, and the whole state knows she's fine. And when that woman gets a moving, she bring eyesight to the blind. We were stretched out across the bed. The dying man next door quit dying, lifted up his head and said, oh yeah, yeah, she's good looking, and the whole state knows she's fine. And when that woman gets a moving, she bring eyesight to the blind. Yes, it does.
Fabulous. You guys sound great. You sound great. David, you have played with an incredible array, or I should say an incredible array of musicians have played with you, including these gents here today. But, you know, I'm looking at the list. Bob Dylan, Jerry Garcia, George Harrison, Jonathan Richman, the Eagles, Los Lobos, just heard Los Lobos. There are two fellows I'd like to ask you about, though. Maybe not as well known. The Reverend
Gary Davis,
Reverend Gary Davis, who you learned some finger picking from, and another fellow who I have a great deal of respect for, Johnny Shines.
Oh, yes.
So what can you tell me about those two guys?
Johnny Shines used to travel in the 30s with Robert Johnson. He was probably the person who spent the most time, single person who spent the most time with Robert Johnson, and they used to perform together. And I was asked to produce an LP of Johnny Shines. This was a long time ago. And I produced him the way I produced myself, which I think must have really aggravated the record company and anybody else who listened to it, because I had him singing with backup singers and horns and keyboards. And he... in two separate interviews before he died, said it was his very favorite recording. And I think the reason is because by putting him with these people, I didn't make him sit on a bale of hay in right. overalls with right. a red bandana around his neck, which is what kind of everybody wanted to hear him do. And he didn't particularly like doing that.
Yeah.
And he loved, I mean, he played electric guitar in a lot of this.
An amazing blues musician.
He was broader than people gave him credit for. And he was really happy that he got to show a little of that.
Yeah. And the Reverend Gary, he was a bit of a mentor to you then in your styling?
Reverend Gary Davis was blind. And one of the greatest guitar players to walk on the planet. He was completely unique. And I had the privilege of taking lessons from him. And in return, I used to lead him to church and gigs and things like that.
Hmm.
Yeah. And he was a panic. He was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'd love to hear some more. What would you guys like to do next?
Well, we could do a Little Hat Jones, since we're talking about musicians who recorded in the 30s. There was a character named Little Hat Jones who did a tune. I got to get my hardware out to do this. We were here trying to have our fun. The law jumped up and said, nobody run, and I'm long gone from Kentucky.
long gone and got away. Lucky gonna leave so keen to be just like a submarine. You know, my woman poked her head out from under the bed. She said, please don't let him kill me. I'm nearly half dead. I said, don't worry now, Mama. Won't be here long. Long enough to sing this lonesome song. I'm gonna leave so keen. I'll be just like a submarine. All right now. I knew a man, they called him Austin Jack. He came and put the bloodhounds on my track. But them puppies couldn't catch my scent, you know. They didn't know which way I went, because I left so keen, I was just like a submarine. Now yonder come to Santa Fe, you passed me flying. You should have seen me when I reached up and caught the flies. Now there's another long gone from Kentucky. Long gone and got away, lucky gonna leave so keen. I was just like a submarine. Well, yeah. I'm gonna sing these words, ain't gonna sing no more. I'm leaving San Antonio, I'm not coming back no more. All right. Yeah.
Beautiful, absolutely beautiful. David Bromberg Band live here at 91.5 KRCC. David, it looks like there's a smile on your face. It looks like the joy is back. You took the hiatus and you're enjoying this. The great bunch of guys here. You having fun?
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I really like playing with this particular group of guys. I think it's the best ensemble I've had.
Well, I really, it's been an honor to have you guys in here this afternoon. I really appreciate you lugging your equipment through the snow, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Thank you so much.
Let's do our best to try and make it through.
Yeah, we have no choice. We've got to do our best. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
That was Jeff Beery speaking with legendary David Bromberg. Bromberg's latest album is called The Blues, The Whole Blues, and Nothing But The Blues. You're listening to Air Check from 91.5 KRCC. Stay with us.
Oh, my love, while I'm away, don't you know you've got to be strong, leave those other men alone. Some bright sunny day, I'll be back home to stay. Yield not unto temptation, and let no one lead you astray. So many times you're gonna be lonely. So many times you're gonna be blue. But yield not.
Yield not.
Don't you know you've gotta be strong? Leave those other guys alone. Some bright sunny day I'll be back home to stay.
From 91.5 KRCC in Colorado Springs, this is AirCheck, a show about great music in the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Jake Brownell.
I'm Jeff Beery.
And I'm Vicki Gregor.
We're always looking for new and different musical ideas to present on AirCheck, and Jake and Vicki and myself, We're talking recently about some of the choices we have at hand. Vicki mentioned that she had a mason jar filled with concert ticket stubs. And I have this mason jar now in my hand. I have to hold it with two hands. How many concert stubs would you say are in here, Vicki?
Well, I was never really good at that.
I would guess
jelly bean thing.
300-400.
Yeah.
So when did you start collecting your concert stubs?
Well, I think probably mostly that represents from the mid or late 80s up through, you know, last month or something.
All right. We're going to have Vicki pull a few of these concert ticket stubs out and reminisce. We're going to access the Wayback Machine now. I'm going to pull the top off.
All right.
Digging into the jar, pulling out a
All
ticket.
Right. I might have
no
to go
looking,
deep. I'm
no
going
looking.
Deep. All right. What's this one? My daughter's first dance recital. That is very
okay,
important.
Okay, so you collect every kind
of
ticket.
Okay.
I thought these were musical.
Oh no. Well, they're mostly that, okay. But you know, that All was right. important. That was her first
sure.
dance recital.
And there was music involved.
Yeah.
Probably.
It was cool.
All right.
Here we go. Oh, Elephant Revival, Chadwick Stokes, and that was out at La Ferre.
All
that
right.
was Meadowgrass. Music festival.
By the moonlight, we rise with the waking, knees not shaking, sharp and shaping dark. And the dawn's rays, the dim breaking, the truth are blazing, perfect phasing. Oh, taking it for
you. Want to know what I remembered about
yeah.
it? You know, Meadowgrass Music Festival, KRCC had a big hand in the planning and, you know, execution of that festival. Becoming and growing. And Elephant Revival, what was cool about this one is this was their second time through. We had already had them, and now they were moved up to headliner. And they were wonderful. You know, Elephant Revival from Netherland?
Yeah, you know. Up north, Boulder.
And so for them to kind of be the headliners a couple of years after they were a supporting band was pretty cool. And it rained like heck.
Oh, I remember that one.
And lights still be shining above the tree line. No defeat when we join each other here.
All right, Vicki Gregor, digging into the Ball Brand Mason jar. This is an oversized.
Now, this is a recent one. KRCC had a little hand in helping promote this, Tears for Fears, at the Pikes Peak Center, and that happened just last October, 2016. And Tears for Fears, I was very excited about this because that was one of the big 80s bands for me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, those guys made records, they continued to make records, and then I think they had a falling out, so to come back together, and it was an amazing show. Come on, Tears for Fears. Everybody wants to rule the world. You'd be singing. You'd light your lighter. You'd be doing that.
Jay? I gotta ask, you know, I'm a little bit younger than you guys are.
Yes.
It's true.
Admit it.
And so I haven't really gotten to the point where I can see bands that I saw way back when, you know, on their victory
on the
lap.
401k tours.
Yeah. Can you, like, explain the appeal of that to me? Is it a throwback thing? Is it fun to see them, how they've changed? Do you hope that it sounds the same as it did 30 years prior?
Right. Those are really good questions because I'm not in the practice of, like, following everyone.
Uh-huh.
But Tears for Fears, you know, three blocks from where I work, that was too tempting to miss. And what I liked about it is it conjures up a lot of memories. And there's a something about it that's a little bit corny and beautiful because you're in a crowd of people who are going to know every word to every song, and you can see that look in their eye, and you can see where some of them have not changed one bit from 1986, and there's something about that that's really lovely and funny and everything, and there is something nice about it. It's comforting. It's, you know, it's kind of like the concert version of Chicken Soup for Your Soul.
Let me pull one out. Can I pull one out? All right, here's an interesting one.
Oh my gosh, Sarah McLachlan and the Chieftains at Red Rocks. I've done a lot of Red Rocks shows. I think a lot of people have. 1995.
Listen as the wind blows from across the great divide.
Goes back a ways.
Yeah, so I was really loving Sarah McLachlan. I've seen her a few times. But I was really curious about the Chieftains because, you know, it's the Chieftains. And the Chieftains were great. You know, those guys, you know, they're seasoned. In 1995, they were older, seasoned
right.
people. I mean, think about who they've worked with. This was them themselves.
Any bagpipes?
Oh, everything. And the Ulian pipes, whatever those are called. And, you know, that drum, the Bludrach or whatever that thing is. And, you know, some the squeeze box thing. So it was very incredible Celtic rock music. And then Sarah joined them. They had a big finale at the end, which was really fun.
All right, here's a yellowed ticket stub. It's a Teletix ticket stub.
Oh, this was great. This is The Cure, and I've seen them several times, and this would have been, oh, wow, it's 1987. Okay, it's a miracle this one made it home. So it's The Cure at Red Rocks.
Kiss me, kiss me, kiss me. Your tongues are poison, so swallow it.
The Cure at Red Rocks was the Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me.
I was there.
I didn't even know you then.
We didn't bump into each other.
That show was amazing. It really was. It started with Robert Smith's lips. They had like this big screen, and as they're kind of flashing his lips, there's a little bit of blood that starts coming out. It was just an amazing show that... it's amazing I remember as much as I do. Somebody else drove home that night,
all right.
As I recall, and I almost got into a fight in the parking lot.
Wow, Vicky, your friend and neighbor.
My fault, though.
Man.
Not my fault.
Blame
but
it on
but
the
some
other guys,
comments
huh?
were being made, and I took exception to them about myself and others, and I turned around, and the friend who was with me saw it in my eyes and grabbed me by the shirt collar and put me in the
wow.
other direction.
This is an impressive jar of ticket stubs, Vicky. I'm putting them back in right now, and this jar is the size of a coffee can, and it's packed.
Yeah.
Well, there's more tickets. I mean, we could do this forever, because there's so many tickets in here. We could relive your life forever.
No,
vicariously.
Next time, you're going to bring in your sock drawer.
Ooh.
Harry Truman was our president. A Coke and burger cost you 30 cents. I was still in love with Mavis Brown. On the night Hank Williams came to town.
That's it for this edition of Aircheck from 91.5 KRCC. You can find more about any of the songs or artists you heard on this episode at krcc.org. You can also subscribe to the Aircheck podcast by searching Aircheck, two words, in the iTunes store. Special thanks this week to Joel Bielik, who engineered the David Bromberg interview that you heard earlier in this show.
For KRCC, I'm Jeff Beery.
I'm Jake Brownell.
I'm Vicky Gregher.